Hello, Dan. It's Joe here. I hope you're keeping well. It's the 21st of December. Now they're ringing the last bell. If I get good behavior, I'll be out of here by July. But won't you kiss my kids on Christmas Day? Please don't let them cry for me.
Welcome to The Art of Letters. I'm Melanie Tate. Today we're looking at family letters.
I guess the brothers are driving down from Queensland, and Stella's flying in from the coast. They say it's gonna be 100 degrees, even more maybe, but that won't stop the road. Who's gonna make the gravy now? I bet it won't taste the same. Just that flour, salt, a little red wine. Don't forget a dollop of tomato sauce for sweetness and that extra tang. And give my love to Angus and to Frank and Dolly. Tell them all I'm sorry. I screwed up this time. And look out the ring. Early Christmas morning, when I'm standing in line.
Hello, pretty mama. I want you to know that I love you with all my heart and that I miss you a lot. I also want you to know that this is not easy. It is very hard, and I want you to forgive me for all the swear words that I told you for 13 years, and that no distance is enough to cause a drift in the love that I feel for you.
That's a translation from a letter by Daniela Castillo. Daniela was writing earlier this year from Australia to her mother in Colombia. The family have been victims of violence because of their politics, and her mother is trying to gain entry to Australia on Daniela's sponsorship.
I have also learned to value you a lot, because I no longer have the person who would wake me up every morning and make me a juice. I did not like it, but pretty mummy, I want you to be with me and never be separated from you again. You do not know how much I miss you. I love you.
In the letter, Daniela draws a picture of a heart.
This drawing has a lot of meaning because when I did it, I was feeling a bit lonely. That is why I'm sending it to you, because I know what you were thinking about on that day. So when you have this very valuable drawing, you'll know I love you and may God bless you.
There's nothing like the push and pull of family. No relationship quite so intimate or intense.
Dear Edie and Jim, we, the undersigned, offer you our heartiest congratulations on this unique occasion in the lives of you both. And if you only knew how much we appreciate the title of uncle, which you have been good enough to confer on us all, you would doubtless feel amply compensated for any trouble or inconvenience you have been put to on this auspicious occasion. Rumour has it that it, mark the it, is a little black or dark-haired girl, which is even more pleasing to us, for we would rather, being boys, take under the protection of our unclehood one of that sex than the opposite. We, its obedient and loving uncles, will ever pray that it may live long and prosper. Yours affectionately, S. Elmore, D. Elmore, E. J. Elmore.
Here's E. B. White, writer for The New Yorker, dog lover and devoted husband and father. He's writing here on behalf of the family's Scottish Terrier, Daisy.
Dear Mrs. White, White has been stewing around for 2 days now, a little bit worried because he's not sure that he has made you realize how glad he is that there is to be what the column writer in the Mirror calls a blessed event. So I am taking this opportunity, Mrs. White, to help him out to the extent of writing you a brief note. Well, the truth is White is beside himself and would have said more about it, but is holding himself back, not wanting to appear ludicrous to a veteran mother. What he feels, he told me, is a strange, queer, tight, little twitchy feeling around the inside of his throat whenever he thinks that something is happening which will require so much love, and all on account of you being so wonderful. I'm not making myself clear, I'm afraid, but on the occasions when White has spoken privately with me about this, he was in no condition to make himself clear either, and I am just doing the best I can in my own way. Of course, he is also very worried for fear you will get the idea that he is regarding you merely as a future mother and not as a present person, or that he wants a child merely as a vindication of his vanity. I doubt if those things are true. White enjoys animal husbandry of all kinds, including his own, and as for his regard for you, he has told me that, quite apart from this fertility, he admires you in all kinds of situations or dilemmas, some of which, he says, have been quite dirty. Well, Mrs. White, I expect I am tiring you with this long letter. But as you often say yourself, a husband and wife should tell each other about the things that are on their mind, otherwise you get nowhere. And White didn't seem to be able to tell you about his happiness, so I thought I would attempt to put in a word. White is getting me a new blanket, as the cushion in the bathroom is soiled. Lovingly, Daisy.
Now, no one's ever written me a letter on behalf of a Scotty, and I have to say I'm a little disappointed. I have stacks of letters from my mother, apologies after arguments and the occasional one seeking to prolong a disagreement, you know, the and furthermore type. Being the lazy, ungrateful child I was, she doesn't have the collection of letters I should have written to her. By the time I understood it was important to write things down to your mother, email had come along, which isn't the same. Whether we're kings and queens, writers, artists, uni students, or housewives, there's a sort of universality about the parent-child relationship. Children change, and parents wonder what happened. Parents give advice, children take it or leave it. And parents send money and socks.
22nd of February, 1858. Now, I must tell you that you numbered the pages of your letters wrong. And then I must scold you a little bit for not answering some questions. My good dear child never liked matter-of-fact things, but Mama does. Pray do answer my questions, my dearest child, else you will be as bad as Bertie used to be, and it keeps me in such a fidget. I asked you several questions on a separate paper about your health, cold sponging, temperature of your rooms, etc., and you have not answered one. You should just simply and shortly answer them one by one, and then there could be no mistake about them. Queen Victoria to her daughter Vicky, Queen of Prussia.
Dear Jean, I have refrained from writing to you about this quarrelling, as I wanted time to meditate on it. Jean, I think you bully me, and when I ask your mum if this is so, she says, "Of course it is. She bullies everyone, but doesn't think she is doing it." Now, Jeanie, I love you very much. When you read this, don't regard it too seriously. Let it be something in the past, which is not going to reoccur. Love to all, Dad.
Dear Mum, thanks for your letter. I can't remember if there's anything I had to answer in it. I'm sorry it's taken me so long to write. Life with Mrs. O is fraught with difficulties. Whenever I leave part of my meal because I don't feel hungry, she takes it to mean I don't like that particular item, and I never get it again. Sorry we didn't come up last weekend. I was too poor and had too much study. Big love, Steve.
16th of November, 1994. Dear Venerable Family, London is getting ready for Christmas. The Regent Street lights were turned on Monday night, and Stella and I drove past in a taxi after the theatre. We were a little disappointed. Would it be possible for Mummy or Deborah to send me a nice, easy and yummy turkey stuffing recipe and maybe a guide to cooking time? And don't laugh at the thought of me slaving over a hot turkey. Love and crumbly stuff, S.
Dear Mum, surprisingly, I managed to get the jumper from your other son, the reprobate, and the socks. It's a real beauty. It will be a godsend when winter comes. If I manage to catch up on study, I'll come up and see you the weekend after Anzac Day. How's your leg? Big love, Steve.
4th of June, 1968. Dear Dad, I cannot find anything to say in answer to your letter except that I am truly sorry. I have been tactless and thoughtless and have caused you pain. Much love, Jean. Dearest Mother, I felt that after the wailing blast of the last letter, I owed you a quick follow-up to tell you that it is a new day, bright with sun and a milder aspect, and my intense physical misery is gone, and with it my profound despair. I had a complete physical exam last week, having had a chest x-ray, and was pronounced fine. But they suggested I might see their psychiatrist to fill in the details of my breakdown. Well, I went to see him this morning and really enjoyed talking to him. I love you very much and hope you will understand my present frankness and know that it has made me feel much better just to know that you are listening. Your own loving Civvy, Sylvia Plath.
Here's the great John Steinbeck with what could serve as a template for anyone offering advice to their children.
New York, November 10th, 1958. Dear Tom, we had your letter this morning. I will answer it from my point of view, and of course Elaine will from hers. First, if you're in love, that's a good thing. That's about the best thing that can happen to anyone. Don't let anyone make it small or light to you. Second, there are several kinds of love. One is a selfish, mean, grasping, egotistical thing which uses love for self-importance. This is the ugly and crippling kind. The other is an outpouring of everything good in you, of kindness and consideration and respect. Not only the social respect of manners, but the greater respect which is recognition of another person as unique and valuable. The first kind can make you sick and small and weak, but the second can release in you strength and courage and goodness and even wisdom you didn't know you had. You say this is not puppy love. If you feel so deeply, of course it isn't puppy love. But I don't think you are asking me what you feel. You know better than anyone. What you wanted me to help you with is what to do about it, and that I can tell you. Glory in it for one thing, and be very glad and grateful for it. The object of love is the best and most beautiful. Try to live up to it. If you love someone, there is no possible harm in saying so. Only you must remember that some people are very shy, and sometimes the saying must take that shyness into consideration. Girls have a way of knowing or feeling what you feel, but they usually like to hear it also. It sometimes happens that what you feel is not returned for one reason or another, but that does not make your feeling less valuable and good. Lastly, I know your feeling because I have it, and I'm glad you have it. We will be glad to meet Susan. She will be very welcome, but Elaine will make all such arrangements because that is her province and she will be very glad to. She knows about love, too, and maybe she can give you more help than I can. And don't worry about losing. If it is right, it happens. The main thing is not to hurry. Nothing good gets away. Love, Fa. John Steinbeck.
Grandparents are under no obligation to offer advice, say anything sensible, or of any practical use. All they want is for their grandchildren to love them and read their letters. Grandmothers and grandfathers feed their grandchildren lollies when they know they will rot their teeth and find every accomplishment, no matter how trivial, marvellous. In short, Grandparents can play to the crowd and get away with it.
Dear Alison and Jamie and Helen and Johnny, I am going to tell you something of which Nanny and I are very ashamed. You may tell Mummy and Daddy, but it is too disgraceful to tell anyone else. We have a thief in the family. Isn't it awful? The cat, Bowie, was caught red-handed on the kitchen table looking at the butter. He may even have licked it. You won't tell anyone, will you? Perhaps his great-grandmother or someone like that was an alley cat. And his mother is so good and brave. A big black dog who lives near here came into our yard and called out, "Woof." So Lizzie gets up and goes out. He says, "Woof, woof," several times, meaning, "I have come to eat you and Bowie." Lizzie's hair stands on end, and she goes towards him spitting and growling. When she is quite near, but not too near, however, he runs away and calls out a lot of impudent remarks. And you would never guess where Bowie was while his brave mother was defending the home front so valiantly. He wasn't there. We do wish you were here now. We know you will all help Mummy when you come over here next week. Tell her to write a list of all the eating things we are to get in before you arrive and see that she does what she is told. Sometimes she does not. We send you all our love, Puppy.
Here's another grandfather's letter, but this one isn't written to his grandchild, but in defence of him. It went viral recently, taken up by gay rights groups around the world.
Dear Christine, I'm disappointed in you as a daughter. You're correct that there's a shame in this family, but mistaken what it is. Kicking Chad out simply because he told you he was gay is the real abomination here. A parent disowning her child is what goes against nature. The only intelligent thing I've heard you say is that you didn't raise your son to be gay. Of course you didn't. He was born this way and didn't choose it any more than being left-handed. If you find your heart, give us a call. Dad.
When brothers and sisters put pen to paper, the letters once again belie an intimacy and a relationship that may not be necessarily more solid than friendship, but it's always more primal.
To Cassandra Austin, Rowling, Sunday, 18th of September. My dear Cassandra, this morning has been spent in doubt and deliberation, in forming plans and removing difficulties, for it ushered in the day with an event which I had not intended should take place so soon by a week. Frank has received his appointment on board the Captain John Gore. I wrote to Miss P on Friday and hoped to receive an answer from her this morning, which would have rendered everything smooth and easy and would have enabled us to leave this place tomorrow. What dreadful hot weather we have! It keeps one in a continual state of inelegance. If Miss Pearson should return with me, pray be careful not to expect too much beauty. How ill I have written. I begin to hate myself. With best love, I am affectionately yours, Jay Austen.
To my sister Lillian. It seems but yesterday when you were 15, I not far behind, and one of us was suddenly seized with the desire to write things, and immediately the other was seized with the same overwhelming desire. Had we not all our little lives done everything together and cared for nothing the other could not share? We used to lock the bedroom door and write at the old marble washstand that was so generously roomy. No house whiffery has ever been able since to take those ink stains from its surface. Do you remember the characters we conjured up? Our faith in each other in those days made our mutual criticisms gentle and our admiration boundless. Ethel Turner, 1898.
20th of July, 1847, Durban, South Africa. To Duncan McIntyre, Victoria, Australia. My dear Duncan, I am forced to sit down to take pen and paper to write you the following lines, and let you know that I'm in perfect good health and hoping this may find you the same. I'm sorry to find that you have been so careless as never to write to me at home or abroad. I thought I might have the happiness of corresponding with you at least when I came to this colony, but that was merely a dream of mine. I've written you twice since I came to this country, but have never received an answer. If you find it troublesome or wasting so much of your precious time, then we shall cut it short directly. All I would like to say may be said in a few short lines, that you have not dealt with me as I would have done to you. But never mind. I haven't heard from Malcolm since I left England. It is not likely that we are ever to meet again in this world, so I must bid you goodbye. I am really disappointed in your promising from first to last, but if you will only write to me now, it will make up for all the past. I must conclude this letter from your true and affectionate brother, John McIntyre.
In 1860, Anton Chekhov wrote to his brother Dmitri. It's a letter full of fraternal advice. It may have hurt Dmitri's feelings. His reply isn't recorded, which of course is one of the problems with letters. Often we only have one side of the correspondence, but it doesn't matter so much because this is a letter we can all take something from. It's about living a cultured and gracious life, a grown-up life.
Moscow, 1886. You have often complained to me that people don't understand you. Goethe and Newton did not complain of that. Only Christ complained of it, but he was speaking of his doctrine and not of himself. People understand you perfectly well, and if you do not understand yourself, it is not their fault. I assure you, as a brother and as a friend, I understand you and feel for you with all my heart. I know your good qualities as I know my five fingers. I value and deeply respect them. You have only one failing, and the falseness of your position and your unhappiness and your catarrh of the bowels are all due to it. That is your utter lack of culture. Forgive me, please, but veritas magis amicitia. You see, life has its conditions. In order to feel comfortable among educated people, to be at home and happy with them, one must be cultured to a certain extent. Talent has brought you into such a circle, you belong to it, but you are drawn away from it, and you vacillate between cultured people and the lodgers vis-à-vis. What is needed is constant work day and night, constant reading, study, will. Every hour is precious for it. Come to us. Smash the vodka bottle. Lie down and read. Turgenev, if you like, whom you have not read. You must drop your vanity. You are not a child. You will soon be 30. It is time. I expect you. We all expect you.
It's what we want from family. Honesty, directness, compassionate and constructive criticism. Imagine if we all had brothers like Chekhov. We can all learn something from his letter, because a good letter reflects how we should be in real life too. Clear and thoughtful and always saying what we need to say. You've been listening to The Art of Letters. For more information about the program or to listen again, go to the RN website at abc.net.au/radionational. Next week, we look at that correspondence that makes all our hearts sink, the breakup letter. But for now, best regards from me, Melanie Tate, writer-producer Sophie Townsend, and technical producer Mark Don.